okay, it's 12 o'clock, I'm pressing the button.
You've got questions about vaccine mandates at work and school and other questions concerning back to school, and we have answers for you today. Hi, I'm Stuart Shepherd, and this is First Liberty Live. Before we get started, one thing that you can do that's very helpful to us, we've been watching our followers grow, the number of them every week, and that's because of people like you who share and like these videos. So if you would do that for us, that helps this project along, and we want to say thank you in advance for doing that. Keisha Russell is one of our attorneys here at First Liberty Institute. Our legal team has been getting a lot of yes. of inquiries about vaccine mandates, both at work and at school and all these other things. We thought it would be good to bring you on, and we collected some questions that people have asked that we're going to pitch to you. Hi, Keisha.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, but we're going to grill you today, so I hope
That's
you're ready.
All right.
You got all that
I'm
together.
I'm ready.
And before we start, and I need to say this, we're not going to say one way or the other whether someone should or should not be vaccinated. That's not our expertise. That's not what we do. But what we can share with you is some of what the law says about mandates and vaccines and that sort of thing. And we trust you to make your own decisions with that. We're just going to give you information and you can choose. Now, it's advice about it, but it's not legal advice in the strictest sense, meaning before you make any choices or decisions, do consult with your own attorney, because that is the real legal advice, if you will. We're offering opinions and insights, right? Am I saying it right?
And the
Have
law,
I disclaimer
yeah.
enough
yes,
today?
That's right. Yes.
Well, Keisha, first of all, and I've got a list of questions, but before we get to those, the overarching question, which just came out in the news recently, is the President of the United States has said that there is a mandate for the vaccine that covers federal employees and some private employers. If you would just unpack that for us, help us understand what happened and what did not happen.
Sure. So, President Biden's vaccine mandate actually has two parts. So the first part is that all federal employees and contractors must be vaccinated or get tested once a week. And then the second part of it is all private employers who have 100 or more employees must do the same, get vaccinated or have weekly testing. And so the second portion, which will be instituted through the Department of Labor through this really small office called OSHA. You're going to hear people talk about it all the time, but that just means Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And that small office is supposed to issue a regulation that will encompass that 100 employee mandate. It is not out yet, so it is not effective yet, and so employers don't need to do anything related to this particular mandate until that regulation comes out, and it could be weeks or even months before that happens.
And the big question that I keep hearing is, can they do that? Does he have the authority to issue that kind of mandate? He can for government employees.
Certainly
I get that,
for the federal employees.
But can he do that for private employers of 100 or more?
Well, that's going to be the million-dollar question for the courts. I can tell you there's going to be a lot of litigation surrounding whether the president has the authority to do this, and also some questions about whether OSHA and regulating, you know, workplace injuries, which is what they're supposed to do, whether they also have the authority to regulate vaccine mandates. So that's going to be the question that the courts are going to have to answer. So it should be interesting in the next couple of weeks and months what happens.
So that's breaking news. So now we're going to move on to the questions that we've been getting. In order for them to have proper context, I want to set them up with this question. I think this will work here. How's that? We're going to have questions up here on the big screen. It's kind of cool.
Very fancy.
If someone wants to get a religious accommodation, What's the process? What do you have to do if you want to say, I'd prefer not to get the vaccine, I want my employer to make an accommodation for me? What's the process? How do you do that?
So you want to submit a written accommodation to your employer. Your employer might have a process. They might have a website. They might have something like that. So you want to comply with that process. No matter what, you want to do that in writing. You want to specify your religious objections to the vaccine. And you want to even include things you're willing to do instead. You know, the types of accommodations you're willing to do in lieu of getting vaccinated. You do not, in terms of the federal law, Title VII through, you know, that governs federal employees, you do not need to submit some sort of approval letter from your pastor or pope or whatever it is, right? You don't need any of those things. Mm-hmm. Some employers are going to ask for that, but that technically is not necessary for you to submit an accommodation and get it approved.
And one important part of that, and I don't want people to miss it, is if you submit it and they accept it, they may ask you to do something as well, that your job may change or your assignments may change, right?
Yeah, you want to be flexible as much as possible and want to do something as long as it's not something that's going to necessarily get you demoted or something that's going to be this huge change in your job duties. You want to, as much as you can, work with the employer to help them accommodate you. And the employer is supposed to accommodate you as long as it's not an undue hardship for them. And that's kind of a legal standard, which I won't go into, but they at least have to consider your accommodation. They can't make some sort of blanket rejection to all religious accommodations or all accommodations at all. They have to consider it. And like I said, your religious beliefs are personal and individual to you. No one else has to agree with the way you believe or how you feel, including anyone else in your denomination.
Right. And we'll get more in depth in that here coming up, because we got questions about that too. Here's a question that came in from one of our followers. Can a request for a religious accommodation be turned down? Can they just say, no, you don't get that?
Well, technically, yes, they can turn it down. They need to have a reason. Like I said, if it's going to be an undue hardship on the employer to accommodate you, then the law says that, yes, they can say no. You're going to want to ask that any rejection provides an explanation and a reason. And if you believe that an explanation or reason is unlawful, you certainly can, you know, appeal that to the EEOC, go to their website. You can also ask us, you know, go to firstliberty.org and submit a request for legal help. Yeah. And you can ask us to opine on, you know, the opinion you were given by your employer.
And we'll put a link for that in the text that goes along with this video so you can find it as you're watching this. Okay, next question. Can the workplace legally test you and make you mask up if you choose not to be vaccinated? And they ask, is that a HIPAA violation?
Well, generally speaking, the asking you about your vaccination status is not generally a HIPAA violation. I won't go into that too much since that's not our area of expertise. Mm-hmm. But in terms of you being asked to, in lieu of vaccination, do something else, that's something you're going to have to decide how much of a burden it is on you to do those things, right? Masking, is that a burden? You know, how you're going to have to really be able to describe why the accommodation that they're offering you is not going to work for you. Okay. And like we always say, try your best to work with the employer. If you really feel that strongly about vaccinations, try to work with them. Now, in terms of the testing, it could be a problem if you're having to absorb the cost or if anyone else is having to absorb the cost. You know, other than the employer, then, you know, those certainly could be some reasons why you can't comply.
Yeah. And underneath that, there's a little subtext that as you enter into this conversation with an employer, it's good to, at least at the beginning, assume that they have good intentions, you have good intentions, and
yes,
you're trying to work it out together.
Yes, absolutely. You want to, like I said, be reasonable and do your best to work with the employer.
All right. If your accommodation is granted by an employer, do they have the power to force a weekly COVID test on the religious and not the secular employees? Can they separate the two?
So provided that the secular employees were also giving some sort of an exemption, right? Like a medical exemption or something.
That's implicit, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so no. Okay, so generally speaking, you cannot treat religious employees differently than other employees. That is called religious discrimination.
Yeah.
You can't subject religious employees to special disabilities or unequal treatment. So to the extent your employer grants exemptions, they should be treating all of those exemptions the same.
All right. Here's one, and this goes on for a bit. The short version you talked about earlier about needing a note from a pastor, I want to give you the full context.
Mm-hmm.
It says, do I have to be a member of a church to submit a religious exemption? Do I have to have proof for religious exemption, a signed statement from clergy? And you said earlier no, but we can unpack that a bit more. But then they go on to say, I'm not an active member of a church, but I have morals and beliefs that prevent me from wanting the vaccine. Plus, I just don't want it, they say. My employer will be mandating it soon. What's your advice, your insight for someone in that position?
So one, if you have a religious objection to it, then you should submit a religious accommodation, right? I just don't want it isn't always a religious reason. So you have to decide whether the way you feel is a religious conviction,
yeah,
because it needs to, you know, arise out of a sincerely held religious belief, right? With that said, Your religious belief is your own. It does not need to be shared with anyone else. You could be the Church of One. The only person on the planet, if you feel that way and it's a sincerely held religious belief, that is fine. And you don't need anyone else in your denomination to agree with you, including the leaders, the pastors or whomever else. You don't need anyone to agree with you. And like I said, you do not need a letter from a religious leader to get that.
Don't think of yourself as religious, but you have deeply held moral convictions, does that get covered by this?
I mean, you could say you have a conscientious objection to it. And I would say, you know, submit it and say that that is your conviction, that you have a sincerely held, you know, religious conviction about it.
Yeah.
And then see what happens.
All right. We're going to move on here to school topics.
Mm-hmm.
And to make that transition, the first question, obviously, most everything we've talked about so far is in the context of an employer and an employee. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about it in the context of schools. I've been reading many articles and hearing from friends on social media that their schools are requiring, both elementary, secondary, and colleges and universities are requiring students to show proof that they've been vaccinated or something happens. I mean, there's some other thing that's going to happen. What is your insight for people in a school setting, both as far as a public school and then on up to university?
Yeah, so states control public schools, right? And that includes the public universities. And so you want to look at your state law to see what their laws are regarding religious exemptions to vaccines in the school context.
Yeah.
So most states do offer religious exemptions to vaccines. Some of them don't, about a handful don't. And so once you find that out, you can submit a religious exemption, you know, request exactly the way you would, as I described before, you know, tell your university, school, whatever, how you feel about that, and then see what happens. But it's pretty much, it's a very similar process if you're a student and you don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And many states do allow religious exemptions to vaccines of all kinds.
Now, notice a change in language there, because when we talked about employers, you talked about accommodations.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about students, you talk about exemptions. Mm-hmm. What's the distinction there? Is there one?
The distinction really is just the legal, you know, terms that you use in the context of the relationship, in the context of a relationship employee-employer.
Yeah.
In terms of the employment laws, you say you're going to ask for a religious accommodation. And then in terms of students, usually the states use the term religious exemption.
Yeah. And I know that you've already worked some cases that deal with exemptions for students in a school setting.
Yes.
That's something we do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As we go along. We got other questions that aren't about vaccine mandates and all. Is there mm-hmm. anything else you'd like to share on that before I move on to those other topics?
No, I think we've covered
okay,
it.
Good.
Yeah.
Here's someone who writes, and we're going to put this under the heading of agendas in the classroom, and there's just a couple of them. The first one, my third grader brought home homework. The question was, if Michael has X amount of dollars, we've all heard these before, and his husband has X amount of dollars, how much would they have combined? And she points out that this homework was handed out to all of the third graders in her school district. And she asks, how do you stop that agenda from being forced on the children? Is there anything you can do about that in a math lesson?
Well, look, number one, of the things I always try and tell parents is you can't hide this stuff from your kids. I mean, they're going to see it. If you have issues with particular state laws that require certain curriculum be taught a certain way, if you have issues with it, no matter what it is, right? And we get a lot of questions about critical race theory and all that, and I tell parents, look, you have to pay attention to what your state is, the type of laws your state is trying to adopt, and also your school board. So pay attention before all this stuff happens.
Yeah.
And if you have an opinion about it, make sure you voice it in the appropriate meetings, etc. To the extent it happens and you're not able to catch it on the front end, then, you know, you always have the choice of where your child goes to school and what they're being taught. And one of the things I always encourage parents to do, because I do get a lot of questions like this, is, look, fill in the blanks for your child. You know, don't just allow someone else to educate your child on everything. Supplement that information. Know what your child is learning at school. Have them talk to you about those things so that you can kind of supplement and give them the full picture if you believe they're not getting it at school. And to me, that's the best way to handle, you know, that situation, is just be very involved.
So parents are the first educators of children in all mm-hmm. things, and it is important. I've heard discussed along the way, and to unpack this a bit more, some states, some school districts have rules concerning sex education curriculum that parents might have to be notified or opt out.
Mm-hmm.
But when it shows up in math curriculum, not so much, right? Is that what I'm hearing?
It can be different. Yeah, it can be harder to at least find a way around that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, sex education, obviously, in many different forms, you are allowed to opt out of that. And pretty much most states, as parents, you're allowed to take your child out of that kind of education and decide for yourself how you want to discuss those topics with your child.
Yeah.
But when it's sort of intermingled throughout the curriculum, it can be difficult to challenge. But if you have an issue with those things, talk to the teacher, talk to the school board, you know, just be vocal and, you know, try to work with them as well. But take action.
Years ago, in Chicago, I was at a conference of people on the other side of this. As a reporter, they knew I was there. In fact, they announced me before every session that they had. And in that session years ago, before this was happening in the classroom, they were laying the groundwork for this and mm-hmm. talking about putting it. And they gave this very example of a math lesson where you would just work this kind of language into a math lesson and talked about pushing it all the way down to kindergarten. That's where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And they've succeeded in pressing that into the classroom. And you really hit something that I think is key, and that is before we teach our children about math, about spelling, about how to cook, about anything, we need to teach them discernment to be able to see things that they may disagree with or not see the same way and mm-hmm. be able to realize that's in this curriculum mm-hmm. and recognize it for what it is and be able to process that in lieu of their own worldview and how they view the things in the world.
Yeah, it's important to teach them those kind of critical thinking skills to work with any kind of information they're being given. And you talk to them, of course, about your religious belief or your worldview, whatever it is, but give them the skills and the knowledge for themselves to critically think through the things that are presented to them so that they can decide for themselves what they think about these things.
Through the camera, I'm hearing some people shouting at the screen right now. You know what they're shouting?
Hmm?
Homeschool.
Oh,
just
well,
thought I'd share that with you.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, you do
you
have a choice of where your child goes
Texas.
To school. But the thing about that is you can homeschool your child and they, if they have social media or if they have, you know, you really just have to be involved. If it matters that much to you, you know, just be involved.
Just wanted to let you know we acknowledged you. We heard you through the screen.
Yeah.
I know. And private school. I mean, that's
you can't
also
keep your child from everything. It's just it's
and that's
just
why discernment
happen.
Is so important.
Yeah.
We've just got to teach them that from an early age.
Yeah.
And you touched on this a second ago, but this I want to talk about as a separate issue. We also had people asking about critical race theory in the classroom. And they ask, what legal protections can we exercise to combat critical race theory? What would you say?
I mean, it's the same thing as I said before, just that the parents, if it's something that you have an objection to, then you need to present those objections prior to these kinds of regulations and laws being passed in your state or school district.
Yeah.
To the extent you don't catch that. Now, obviously, our area is religious, you know, freedom. And
right.
So if you feel like there's any connection between that, you know, curriculum and that conflicts with your religious objections, then you handle it the same way. You submit those, you know, objections to the school and you see, you know, how that goes if you're able to shield them. But it's like I said before, you can't really shield children from a lot of this stuff. So you just present the whole picture so that when students are presented with this information, they know how to chew on it and work through it and think about it for themselves.
So be proactive, be vigilant, and consider your alternatives. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes.
All right, Keisha, anything to wrap it up before I let you go?
You know, just I think everyone should, you know, understand that we're going to have conflicting beliefs about a lot of things. And we need to just be understanding, you know, that's part of the benefit of living in a country like this, is that you're allowed to have your own opinion, you're allowed to voice those opinions. And I just, you know, want to encourage everyone to stand up for themselves and not be bullied into silence. You know, just speak.
All right. Keisha, thank you so much. Lots of good insights in there. It's always good to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And we have some resources for you that you'll find helpful. It's a couple of, we call them protection kits. They're downloadable booklets that deal with both vaccines and also classrooms for both students and teachers, classroom issues for students and teachers. One focuses, like I said, on the vaccines, the other students and teachers. The links are below. These are our gift to you. We want you to have them because we want you to be informed about these issues. And Keisha helped write them, so I have to throw that in as well. Thank you for doing that, for sharing your wisdom with everyone. You will definitely want to catch next week's episode. We just this week filed the formal request for the Supreme Court to hear the case of Coach Joe Kennedy, the coach who was fired for saying a silent prayer at the 50-yard line. You won't believe what the Ninth, you know, the Ninth Circuit said that he just prayed wrong?
Yes.
I'm paraphrasing, but when you read what they said you didn't pray right there, Coach. So we're going to ask him about that and unpack that. That will be next week right here on First Liberty Live.